It gives me great pleasure to introduce Mary P. from Morro Bay.
Hi, I'm Mary and I am an alcoholic. Wow, thank you. Thank you, Robert, wherever you are. I hope he's not drinking in the parking lot. Thanks for inviting me. And I want to thank some friends that came down to see me, or up, or wherever you came from. I want to thank that. And I thank you for the newcomers and the birthday people. How neat. There's a lot of birthdays tonight. Birthdays are important. So hopefully, I usually talk a lot about my drunkalog, and I forget to tell you I'm sober. So... But I'm sober, and I'll give you that information. Last month, I turned 38, and I'm so grateful for that. I never thought that would happen. And also, last month, I turned 80. That's even a bigger miracle. I look good, but the parts are old. And that's just a gift, let me tell you. I haven't done anything to preserve it. I'm just a drunk, you know? A good old sloppy, wet your pants, throw up on other people, kind of drunk. And I did nothing in my youth that was healthy. I couldn't dance. I have two left feet. I couldn't play basketball, you know, volleyball. I'm not coordinated, but I know how to drink. And I'll tell you this, I was born in New York City. Yay! And I had my first drink at 14, not New York City. We'd moved upstate New York to a little town called Goshen, New York. And at that time, I think there was maybe 2,000 population. And that's where I started drinking. You think from being in the city, you know, and all that stuff going on, I would drink there. But oh no, I got going in the city with the country kids, and I didn't belong up there at all. They still smelled from the manure in the barn in the morning when they went to school. You know, I was a slick-looking little kid. Cute. I had older sisters, and they dressed me real good. So here I am. I turn out to be a good old drunk in Goshen, New York. Oh, who knows where you're going to start. I ended up in California, and that's a long story. There was 28 years of drinking. And I loved booze. It took care of me. I was different. I knew I was different. I didn't belong. I knew I was an oddball. I used to stand in the park and wonder, what is going on in this world, you know? And I just felt like I was a real weird person. I didn't even know what I was. I was so confused. And when I took that drink, something happened to me. Something really special. All of a sudden, it was like there was the missing link was connected. And I was okay. I fit. And before you knew it, I was just a country girl, you know, drinking and slopping around, you know. But anyway, I led from that. I didn't drink every single day, but by the time I was 17, I was drinking in the worst bar in town. It was called the Squirrel Cage. And it was right across the street from the police station. And that's usually not a good place to hang out. And the old guys, you know, the 24-year-olds and the 30-year-olds would buy me drinks. I was just a little sweet little kid. Ha ha. Anyway, and I wasn't coming home when I was supposed to. And my father threw me out the day after graduation from high school. I'm not sure how I graduated, but I did it. And he tossed me out. He packed up my clothes in boxes. We didn't have plastic bags then. And he just put them in boxes. And he took me to my sister's house in New Jersey. And she said to me, she said, you're going to straighten out or else I will kill you. And I have a sister, Katie. And Katie had a real mean streak in her. And I knew my death would not be easy. I knew it would be extremely painful. And she was sincere. So I did get a job. And I was working in New York City. And I tried to not be a drunk. You know, I really tried. But I'd go go out with my friends from work, and I'd get a little tipsy, you know, but I kind of concealed it. And then once in a while, we'd go away on a weekend, and I'd get stinking drunk, and I'd come back, and I'd be a mess. Well, I kind of fooled her for a while. But then I met a guy who had money. He was older than me. He had a real good job. And I thought, well, I'm going to hook this guy. And so I did. I didn't really like him, but I encouraged him to get married. Let's put it that way. I try to be nice. So I kind of hooked him into getting married. And we did. I was 18 at the time. And we got married, and a few days later, I was 19. And I was walking down the aisle with a fufu dress, and I'm thinking, my father's got me by the arm, and he's so glad to get rid of me. And as I'm going down the aisle, I was thinking, you know, I really don't like him, but I'm going to get married because I like his family. They drink a lot, and they party. And so in 20 years, when I'm 40, I'll, you know, 40, 41, 42, I'll divorce him. And then I'll go live my own life. And that was my plan, walking down the aisle. And so, needless to say, that relationship was pretty bad. It wasn't a good relationship. I tried my best, but I couldn't be loving and kind. I did not have it in me. And we had two little boys, and I'm the kind of drunk who's an abusive mother. And I don't want to make it sound too horrible, but I was a rotten mother. You know, I drank my booze, and my drugs were more important than my children and my home and everything else. And I was the kind of wife that was a cheating kind of wife. You know, I was the gal that hung out in the bar and kept calling home saying, yeah, I'll be home, I'll be home, I'll be home, and not showing up till it's really late at night. And that's how I was. I had extramarital activities going on with hairdressers, the bartenders, and the, you know, whoever, people at work. I was just a slut. I turned out to be just a couple. There is no kind word for it, you know. So that's the truth. I can't cover it up. I was nothing else. Ladyhood had left a long time ago. It left at 14. And so there I was. And I was a busy woman. I was busy lying and cheating. I was a thief. I liked to steal. I worked for companies and I stole from them. I stole cash money, you know, when there was a register. When I was a little kid, I started stealing out of my father's register. We had a grocery store in Manhattan on 135th Street and Broadway. And I had older sisters and a brother, and we all worked at the store. And I used to take the money out. And back in those days, you know, I'm 80 years old, so in those days, those were the old days. And they had movies you could go to for 25 cents. You could get ice cream. You could get candy. You know, $5 would buy me a pair of shoes. It would take me out for lunch. I could buy ice cream, candy, go to the movies, and have money left over for comics. You know, $5 isn't going to do that today, but it did it then. And I, you know, I'd steal $5 out of the register. And they always blame my oldest sister, Katie, which I was kind of happy about because I didn't like her anyway, because she was the mean one. But anyway, okay, so that's that part. What else do I tell you? I ended up, my kids were in school, and I got I had stayed home for a while, you know, because the kids were a year and a half apart, so I stayed home, and I was this lousy mother, as I described. I verbally abused them. You know, I told them terrible things, that they were good for nothing, and they would always be good for nothing. You know, and I hit them. I did more than spanking them. And I'm not proud of that. But, you know, I was such a crazy, mixed up person. I just couldn't stop it. I knew I knew as I was hitting my son, I knew this is wrong. I knew what I was doing. And I knew as I was cursing these little kids out, I knew what I was saying was mean and vicious. And I could not stop it. That's where booze and drugs took me. You know, there was a point in my drinking in the 60s where I was vomiting blood, so I got hospitalized. And I was sent home with a diet of pills and liquids and stuff like that. And I got started in the drug program going, you know, all kinds of stuff. We had all kinds of wondrous things that you took then. And it was easy to get. I could go to the drugstore on the corner and go to the drugstore on the next street. And I could go to the drugstore in another city. It was no problem. They didn't check up on that stuff. So all the drugs that I took, I paid for through a druggist, you know, which is crazy. But I did. And I had prescriptions for it. And I took them and I drank with them. And people like Marilyn Monroe died from overdoses of the stuff I was taking. And my husband at that then was working for this news company, a big one in the city. And I saw the autopsy report, what Marilyn Monroe took. And I thought, God, I take more Valium than she did. What a wimp. She's dead. But there I was, still going. So as time went on, I was getting angrier at this husband of mine. And because I was kind of slipping on my lies, you know, I'd be saying I'm out with my girlfriends and I'm out in some hotel with some crazy guy somewhere, I don't even know where, or in a bar or in an alley or God knows where. And so I was hating him more. And he got real sick one year, and he almost died. And when the doctor came by and said, well, it's not what we thought it was, I was really disappointed, you know, because he wasn't going to die. So he lived. But then I started plotting his demise. I figured, he's allergic to shrimp. I could do something about that. I make a good strawberry shake. I used to put heavy cream in it and good ice cream and whip that sucker up. If I put a little shrimp in that and he drank it, he wouldn't know the difference and his throat would close up and he'd pass out and I wouldn't call 911. I just let him die and I would have the insurance and I'd be free of him. So that was my plan. I was ready to kill him. That was in 1978 and I was pretty close to doing it. I was very close to doing it. And all of a sudden, I decided, I don't think I better do this. So I did the next best thing. I'm 41 years old, and I decide to run away from home. So I packed up some bags. My husband worked a lot late at night, so I packed up a couple of suitcases and arranged to get some money out of the bank, and I took off for California. And I came to California, I came to San Francisco, met up with a friend of mine in Los Gatos, and now I was an unprotected drunk. And that wasn't fun, because the things that I used to do back east in New Jersey, where I was living in a house with the family and everything. When I passed out in the garage, somebody would bring me into the bedroom and put me to bed. Well, that wasn't happening here. I was all by myself, and there was nobody left. So when I passed out wherever the heck I was, and God knows where I woke up. I had trouble finding my way home sometimes. And I was an unprotected drunk. And that isn't a pretty picture either for a woman. Now, mind you, I'm a slut. I am just this kind of drunk that could go anywhere. And I could throw up on you as well as have sex with you at the same time. And I was losing control of my bladders and my bowels. And there's a lot of bar stools up north that have stains from me. and I'll never be able to pay them all back. But that's how I was. And so I got this bright idea. Here I am in beautiful California. And they had this nudist club up in the hills. And I thought, I'm ruining my clothes, you know. This is getting pretty bad. You know, I had stains in the front, stains in the back, and, you know, stains down here. I was really very attractive. And so I decided to join the nudist club and to save my clothes. Well, that kind of worked. Not too well at times, but sometimes it worked pretty good. You know, all you have to do is sit on the grass and, you know, let nature take its course. So, and that was okay. I got away with it. But I met a recovering alcoholic in a hot tub one night. And he was sober. And he used to walk around with cigarettes. You know, this is a nudist clamp. He didn't have a strip of clothes on. Carried a big book, you know, that big old blue book that we got. It's around here somewhere. He carried it under his arm, smoked cigarettes, carried a cup of coffee, and told the worst jokes in the world. And so I met this guy. His name was Ted. God bless Ted. He was the first person I ever talked to about my drinking, that I ever told the truth about what I was doing and what was happening to me. And he didn't put me down. He just would open up the book and read me a paragraph. None of it ever made sense, but he did that anyway, you know. And he was a good guy. He never, ever told me the things that I knew about myself, like you're good for nothing, you know, and what's wrong with you. He never talked like that. He just said, yeah, I understand. I know. I've been there. I've done stuff like that. You know, he talked about putting a revolver to his head with one bullet and pulling the trigger. He pulled it so many times, he said, and it never went off. He said he could never understand that. As soon as he took it away from his head and he shot it, it shot. So things like that caught my attention. So I started to go to meetings like this, you know, like this group, speaker meetings, and they played bingo and had potlucks and stuff like that. I started to go to meetings with him. But I wasn't an alcoholic. Uh-uh. No way. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I thought that's great for him, but it wasn't great for me because alcohol still was my answer. And then I got enough meetings in that you guys spoiled me. You ruined my drinking. I got so pissed off at you because all of a sudden I felt really guilty about going to the liquor store and I got all this booze, you know, or in the grocery store. God bless California. You can buy booze in the grocery store. Can't do that in New Jersey or New York. Well, back then you couldn't. I don't know what it's like now. So lo and behold, I get this thing in my head, and now I've got the guilt of AA people watching. But I'm still not an alcoholic. It wasn't in here. But it messed me up here. And so that went on for a while. And one day, my nephew came from back east on a business trip with his boss. And my brother gave him money. He said, go look up your Aunt Mary and see that she's okay. And go buy her lunch. I want to know that she's all right. So he did. I met him in San Francisco with his boss. And we had a nice day. We went to lunch. We were sitting in this very nice restaurant. You know, one that goes around. And the room really did go around. It wasn't one of those in my head. It actually went around. And I ordered a drink. And all of a sudden, that AA poison talk that you talk drilled right into my heart. And I went, oh no, I'm an alcoholic, just like them. And I knew I had to drink that drink. And I tell you, if I knew that was going to be my last drink, I would have taken a better drink. It was one of those sissy drinks, you know, like a pina colada or a chichi or something like that, you know, with the... Anyway, and I knew I had to drink it. I knew I could not drink it. Now, I told you I was a slut, and I'm here with my good-looking nephew. And I thought, uh-oh. I took the drink, and I went, what's going to happen next? And for whatever reason, I realized that I'm truly an alcoholic. And I was devastated. It was not happy news for Mary. It was the worst news of my life. So I got out of there. I said, I'm sorry, I have to go. Drank the drink, and off I go. And my intention was to drive down 280 and hit one of those beautiful concrete walls. I had a little Honda Civic, and that thing could do 90 easy. And I knew if I could gun it, I could hit a wall, and splat, and it'd be all over. And that was my plan, to commit suicide. So I, driving out of San Francisco, hit 280, and there I go along, and I got my eye on a wall, and all of a sudden, there's a sign. It says, Pacifica, Highway 1. And my good old alcoholic brain said, it'd be better if I drive off the cliff. That'll be a lot nicer. It won't be so messy. And then, the next thing I know, I black out. I ended up in a phone booth. This is 1979. We did not have cell phones. We had phone booths. I ended up in a phone booth somewhere, and I'm screaming into the phone, Ted, Ted, that's the hot tub guy. Ted, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. And he said the most marvelous thing he could have said. He said, welcome, kid. We've been waiting for you. He didn't say, you good-for-nothing slut. He said, could have told you so. He didn't say any of that. He said, welcome, kid. And he said, come to the house. And he was like halfway to where I was living. I went to his house, and I don't know what he said. I don't know. It's all foggy. But I did not drink. And he said to me, he sobered me up, you know, he fed me, gave me coffee. I don't remember if I spent the night or what, but I don't think I did. And it was a holiday weekend. And he sent me off the next day, and he said, okay, you know what you got to do now. And I said, yeah, I got to go to those AA things for me, right? He said, right. And you know how to find it. He didn't tell me how to find it. He didn't tell me, go in the phone book, blah, blah, blah. Here's a meeting. I'll look one up for you. He said, you know what you got to do. And he left the responsibility on me. Well, I couldn't call that day. And then I went to work the next day. I was a mess. I was detoxing. I was shaking. Because I was coming off of drugs, too. And I was a total wreck. I don't know how I didn't go into a seizure. But somehow or other, I didn't. It took me another day to call AA. And when I called, I said, look, I don't know what I am. I don't know if I'm an alcoholic or a drug addict. I said, I just don't know. And the woman on the phone said, don't worry about it. You just go to this meeting tomorrow night right here. And she told me where it was. I knew exactly where it was. And it was a church. And so she said, you can tell them and they'll take you in and you can make up your mind later. She didn't say, oh no, we can't take you. You might be a drug addict. Oh no, you know, this is only for alcoholics. She said, just go, you'll hear your story. And I did, I went. I did not hear my story. I went to a meeting finally, a couple of days later. It was called the Hilltop Group in Los Gatos. And it wasn't on a hill, it was flat. And this was this church. And I walk in, and I walk into a room crowded like this, and they were singing. And I went, oh, God, this group sings. I can't sing to save my soul. So I found out it was in the choir room. And some nice gentleman escorted me to the AA room. So I go into the AA room, and I sit at the end of the table there. And I go, oh, no, this is worse. At the end of the table, there was a nun in full habit. I said, now they're going to make me a Catholic. This old lady sat me down. And her husband said, you want a cup of coffee? I said, oh, okay. Give me a cup of coffee. And they only put about that much coffee in. And I looked at it. I thought, those cheap bastards. So that's how it started for Mary. And I got to tell you, it's been a journey. It's been a hoop. You know, I thought, I can't make it here. You know, they're all talking about God, higher power. We had a guy, his nickname was John the Baptist. You swore he walked across water, you know. And he was a holy man. And there was this other lady, Lila. She turned clay. A potter. She made pottery. And she spoke about God like there was flowers coming out of her mouth. And I thought, I can't make it here. I can't do this. And then there was a guy, and he was really weird. And he got up, and he said, and he used to wear a hat, and it was kind of up on this side, down on that side. He was a funny-looking guy. And he said, don't let the water walker scare you away. You know, it got my attention. He said, you can make your higher power whatever you want, or you don't even have to have one. He said, but I believe in the spirit in the salmon that tells the salmon to go against the stream, the way it's running, and go with all its might and just keep on going. And I thought, wow, that makes sense to me. And that gave me an opening. That gave me the gift of staying here. And I only had 3 months at that point. It was now Christmas time, and I wanted to go back east to see my kids for Christmas. And they told me, don't go. You're too weird. You know, they called me Crazy Mary because I was coming off the walls. I was really weird. I'm kind of calm and old now. But let me tell you, it took a long time for me to calm down. And I was one of those neurotic women that would be laughing crazy for 1 second. 2 seconds later, I'm crying deep, heavy sobs of tears, and my nose is running. I was a mess. So they called me Crazy Mary, and I held that title for 7 years. I was so proud of it. That's how sick I was. So anyway, so they said, oh, don't go back east. You're too new. It's too much of a trip because I'd be going back to the house where I lived and, you know, all that. Well, I did it anyway, stubborn as can be. And it was hard. I don't know how I did not drink, but I was scared. I was really scared. And I got back to California and I realized, you know, I had no business doing that. So I started paying a little bit more attention. And I got to tell you, I was also the kind that I wanted to drink. I wanted to take a pill, smoke a little dope, something, just so I wouldn't. This is too much, you know. And that stayed with me. And I felt I was doing the program wrong. I thought, oh, this isn't going to work for me. I was almost 4 years sober when that finally left. So if you're having a hard time and you're too ashamed like I was to say it, to say that you still got that desire, you still got that edge, you know, that scratching feeling that you just want to smooth the edge a little bit, don't worry about it. don't drink, don't use, don't smoke no dope. Hang in there. It'll come, but you gotta wait it out. You gotta wait that thing out. And so finally it left. And I was so relieved. It was like a privilege, you know. Phew. So every time I went back east to visit the kids, you know, try to make a little amends, I worked my steps with my sponsor. God, I got the best sponsor in the world. She was a little lady. She was in her 70s. She was short, about as tall as I am now. She was a cute little thing. And she was Athabascan Indian from the Yukon. And her dad was a French trapper. And she had a hard life. But she loved on me. She loved me. She took me in. She and her husband was as big as her. He was a little tiny guy. Called him Little Eddie, because he was little. And Lucy. And they took me in. I lived in their shed in Saratoga. And they sobered me up. They kept me there. They treated me like I'd never been treated. They loved on me, and I learned how to be a daughter to them. Like, they were like my mom and dad. And they taught me how to be a daughter, how to be a sister, how to have love in my heart. And they gave that to me. So she taught me a lot about how to eat breakfast. That was a big deal. I never ate breakfast. I didn't know that. I was crazy. I'd be calling her up on the phone. I'd be all upset about something. She'd say, did you eat breakfast? I'd say, no, I don't eat breakfast. She said, eat an egg. Have a piece of toast. Glass of orange juice. Call me back. Well, I call her back after following the instructions. I felt better. I thought, why am I calling her for? Anyway, thank God for those two. They gave me a lot of loving, and I needed it. I needed it. So I'd go back to visit my kids and try to make amends. I tried to make amends with that husband that I was going to kill. Didn't tell him that. Every time I'd go back, he'd say to me, Mary, why did you leave? Mary, why did you leave? I'd say, I was sick. Bob, I was sick. I just couldn't. I was sick. Well, it took years. And I tried. I did a few amends with him. I did a one-to-one. It didn't work. Because then I screamed at him, so that wasn't good. I wrote a letter, but nothing really worked with him. And it took 30 years for that amend to heal. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. So my life goes on, my youngest son, I try to make my amends with him. And I said, you know I was a bad mom. And I said, I'm really sorry. I wish I had been a better mother. And he just said to me, I don't want to hear your crap. That's it. And I was instructed if he said anything negative that I should shut up and listen. And I shut up and I listened. I didn't like what I heard. But he had to say that. And my older son accepted me, sort of. You know, he was tolerant of me. And that's the gift of the program. That was the best gift I could get. My sisters, my brother, they were okay with me. They were glad I was leading a decent life. They didn't have to worry about me anymore. Although they kept asking, you still going to those meetings? You still going? You know, 30 years later, are you still going to those meetings? Go, yeah, yeah. Okay, I still go. I want to go. I belong here. This is where I belong. So anyway, you know, I had a few boyfriends. I had a screwy marriage in between. You know, second husband was a guy I met. I had 5 years sober, and we got married. I only knew him a week. That was not a good idea. I had to have that marriage annulled rather quickly. There was a lot of abuse in that. And I had the wisdom, you know, that serenity prayer, the wisdom to know the difference, you'll get it. Believe me. And I had the wisdom to know the difference. I didn't have to stay in an abusive relationship. So Got rid of that one. Had restraining orders. Oh, it was a lot of fun, I tell you. So I swore off. I said, okay, I'm done. I got to work on me. And, I was doing pretty good. I stayed single for a few more years, and then I met a real nice guy in Victor's old sponsor, Pete. I was on a retreat up in California, Northern California. This guy, Pete, showed up, and he chased me around that retreat all weekend. But he lived far away. I was living up in the Bay Area, and he was living down here in San Luis. We had long distance dating, and we eventually got married. It was a good marriage, I gotta say. He was great. We had a real nice marriage. We were a good couple. We were a good little AA couple, and had 22 good years. I'm very grateful for my relationship with him. Got along with his ex-wives. How about that? His girlfriend's ex-girlfriend. He was popular. And, I got along with his kids, too. And he helped me, and I helped him. We did a panel at the prison for many years together. And that was fun, going in as a couple. I treasure those days. So 8 years ago, this Christmas Day, he passed away. And that was rough, let me tell you. That was really rough. But, AA surrounded me. It carried me through a real rough time. And I thought, well, I've come to the end of the rope. This is it, folks. But I kept my commitments. I kept going. And then a year later, my son died, the younger son, the one that we didn't have a good relationship. And that really almost wiped me out. I felt like the wind just was knocked out of my sails. I couldn't breathe. I panted. And I went back for his funeral. It was really difficult, I got to tell you. I hope nobody ever has to go through that again. But there will be people who will go through it. You don't have to drink. I got to tell you that. You don't have to drink over something like that. And so there's the ex-husband, Bob, the one with the shrimp that I was going to kill. Why did you leave me, Mary? God, 30 years. I'm 30 years sober, and he's still saying that. And, at that point, it was the day of the funeral. And at that point, I had nothing left of me. There was no protection here. There was nothing, no filter, no nothing. And I just looked at him. I said, Bob, I wanted to kill you. And poor guy, it just took him back. Of course, what a thing to say. But it came out, and I went, oh no, why did I say that? I felt so bad when I said it. I said, Bob, I told you I was a sick woman. I said, you never got it. He said, oh, my God. So I thought, well, I've done it now. This is it. I blew everything. My son's dead. My husband's dead. And I just told this guy I was going to kill him. What can happen worse next? So it was a little shaky day. And 2 days later, he was going back to Florida with his wife, and we all had breakfast together. And in front of other people, he looked at me and he said, Mary, he said, I forgive you. I'm glad you didn't complete your mission. I went, you and me both, He said, but I forgive you, and I want you to go back to California and have a good life. And that's when the amend took place. It wasn't my doing. It wasn't something I planned. It was in God's time. And sometimes you just got to wait. Sometimes you just got to hang in there till your nails fall off. But sometimes it happens just right. And that's usually God's time, not my time. So if any of you ever have a problem with an amend, just keep at it. You know, do what you got to do. And you don't know when that other person is going to be ready to hear it. I don't want to analyze it or, you know, take it apart. This is my story. This is how it happened. And in my heart, I have peace with him today. I hadn't had peace with him. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, I'm grateful for the life that I've been given. I'm grateful for the friends that have stuck with me through thick and thin. I wasn't in good shape, you know, for several years. I was a mess. But I kept showing up, and I kept doing what I was taught by that little, tiny Lucy. You know, a few years ago, I got a new cat, and I named her Lucy. Now, Lucy lived to be 103. And it was only the last year of her life that she had to go to a nursing home. And that's pretty good. God blessed that woman. And he blessed me by introducing me to her. So now I have another sponsor. He's a gay man, and he's safe to be with, you know? I mean, what are you going to do? We're good friends. I'm safe, he's safe, he don't worry. Sometimes we get in an argument where we kind of look at somebody because we're close in age. And I say, that's good looking. And he'll say, that's good looking. I say, I saw him first. That's my biggest problem. I love him dearly. He's a good friend. He's been a good guide for me. You know, I still need guidance. Sometimes I get crazy as can be. Call him up. I said, my thinking's gone nuts. He said, okay, let's talk. Just talk. You know? And out he comes, and I get a couple of words. Why do I forget all this stuff? You know, you think you get a few years under your belt. It doesn't matter. When that moment of crisis comes, everything goes down the toilet. You know? But grounded in with another alcoholic, telling the truth, just puts me back where I belong. So I want to tell you, my life has been absolutely fantastic since I'm sober. Yes, there's been heartbreak. Yes, there's been losses. But yeah, you know, I have traveled to China. I have traveled to Greece twice. To Italy twice. I've been to Israel. I've been to Egypt. I've been to Russia. I've been to the Baltic Sea. I've cruised. I mean, I'm a going grandma here. I've lived a full life. I have no regrets. I have none. Had I been a different woman, I wouldn't be standing here. But I wasn't. And I got the grace, that grace that's so freely given. I mean, you guys let this woman walk in here stinking drunk, smelled like crap, and I had that in my drawers. And you loved on me. You know, what more could you ask for? So thank you for being here, and I'm done now.